I don't understand why it's so difficult for the press to have a consistent narrative about how dangerous Trump is. You know, the late, great journalist Harry Evans, you know, one time said that, you know, journalists should, you know, really try to achieve objectivity. And by that, he said, I mean, they should cover the object. Well, the object in this case is Donald Trump. His demagoguery, his danger to our country and the world, and stick with it.
Well, that's the, shall we say, unpleasant voice of Hillary Clinton. Thank goodness she didn't get elected just for her voice alone. Sandy Rios with you on Sandy Rios 24/7. That was just 24 hours, 36 hours after the attempted assassination on the golf course for President Trump. And that's her response. He's dangerous. He's a demagogue. And, you know, so a lot of people, leaders, Democratic leaders, as well as the press, are saying horrendous things about Donald Trump. And all of us know that. A danger to democracy, of course, is their theme, which is ridiculous. We don't have a democracy. We have a republic. And anyone that is thinking rationally understands that when they are trying to, I don't know, who's cooperating, but people are trying to kill the president, the would-be president of the United States, one of the candidates, that is a disruption to democracy. And when you ignore a primary and then state someone else that you like, when you allow a candidate to go through the whole process and you know he is incompetent, has dementia, cannot function, and you tell people otherwise, and he wins that primary, and you pull him out and you put in place a woman who could not get even enough support when she ran first for president to stay in the race. She dropped out. People didn't like Kamala Harris. They didn't like what she said. They did not approve of who she was. And that's who they reinstated. If you want to destroy democracy, that's how you do it. So Peter Doocy from Fox was in the press room with Karine Jean-Pierre, the press secretary for... Well, let's see, who for? Is Joe Biden still president? Well, I think he is. But, you know, strangely enough, we don't even think about or talk about the fact that our president is AWOL. And our vice president is who knows where, flitting about the country. You think she's running the country? I don't think so. Although that's a soliloquy you didn't ask for. But Peter Doocy confronts Karine Jean-Pierre on the topic of the rhetoric regarding former President Donald Trump. Here it is, clip one.
It's been only 2 days since somebody allegedly tried to kill Donald Trump again. And you're here at the podium in the White House briefing room calling him a threat. How many more assassination attempts on Donald Trump until the president and the vice president and you pick a different word to describe Trump other than threat?
Peter, if anything from this administration... I actually completely disagree with the premise of your question, the question that you're asking. It is also incredibly dangerous in the way that you're asking it. There are people who, law enforcement officers, who died because of what happened at the Capitol. And they were there because a former president told them to go there. I mean, I don't know if that's not a threat in our democracy when it was one of the darkest days of our democracy, January 6th, one of the darkest days.
You wish. Not one of the darkest days. That's a lie. Police officers were not killed in the Capitol. One police officer died of a stroke the next day. No police officer was killed in that Capitol. They did this, remember this, they honored Brian Sicknick in the Capitol. As Brian Sicknick was never hit by a fire extinguisher. He was never attacked in that way. We have a video of him walking around the rotunda looking fine during the time when they said he'd been killed. So I'm just telling you, that is just so completely false. And the reason I kind of jump in to say that is that I was just at this First Amendment Film Festival, and doing numbers of interviews along with, from J6ers, people involved with them, and we're going to bring you those interviews in the coming days. And we're going to do one of those interviews today, actually, and I think you're going to enjoy it. But first, abortion supporters assure us that not only abortion pills, but also telehealth abortions and self-managed abortions are safe and effective. I told you just a few days ago about Amber, a young girl from Georgia who went to North Carolina to an abortion clinic and got the abortion pills. We've talked about that. Two pills, one to kill and one to expel. And she was having twins. But the problem is, as far as we know, this clinic did not require any in-person follow-up to confirm that the abortion was complete, and it was not. Parts of the babies were left inside of her after she went home and took this pill, these pills, on her own. She didn't realize it. She got an infection, had to go back to the doctor, and she died on the table before they could actually help her. They, as far as we know, the abortion clinic didn't even stay in contact with her. They just gave her the pills and sent her on her way. That's why we have to stop this, and that is why we have to appeal to the moms who are thinking that this is so simple. They'll just take a pill, and it will be over. Can you imagine the trauma of that girl? And then, of course, now she's lost her life. Well, if you'd like to do something about it, we can. When women see their babies in this 4D ultrasound that preborn supplies, it's just a miracle. They actually see them, and most of them just cannot bring themselves to terminating the baby. That's how we help them. That is the most effective help I can imagine. If you want to help provide these, go to preborn.com/Sandy. You can make your best donation, $28, pays for one. But really, however generous you can be. It's preborn.com/Sandy. That's preborn.com/Sandy. Well, you know you can call us at 662-821-2040. You can write us at sandy@afr.net. You can catch the show at the website, sandyrios.com, or any podcast platform. And, of course, you can go to afr.net, which is our home base. So today we have kind of an unusual show, because when I was at this festival, the First Amendment Film Festival down in Texas, I met a young man. Actually, he approached me, or I think I introduced myself, and he introduced himself, and he says, "Oh, I know who you are." He said, "I've been following you. You're a star on Right Wing Watch." Well, Right Wing Watch, it monitors shows like mine, people like me, who say things that they don't like. And so then they repeat them and they make fun, and I know how it goes. Yes, I've been a star of Right Wing Watch for probably, I don't know how many years, since I was back in Chicago, and Patrick remembered that. Patrick identified himself as an atheist and also as a leftist. He was very honest about that. He said, "But I would love to talk to you." And I said, "Well, sure, I'd love to talk to you too, if you promise me that you will print or play what I say, that you won't edit out some things that I say. Just be honest about it. If you promise me that, of course you can interview me." So then we talked about it. We thought, well, we'll just do a dual interview. I will record the conversation while you interview me. And so that's basically what we did. I very much enjoyed meeting Patrick, and I really enjoyed our conversation. And I thought you might also. So stay tuned to today's edition of Sandy Rios 24/7.
From American Family Radio, Sandy Rios.
We are not called to be nice. We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
I think the most important thing we need to demonstrate to our children is genuineness. That we actually believe what we say we believe.
A longtime Fox News contributor, Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
Seek justice, not social justice, but God's justice, what's right and what's wrong.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association,
a pro-life radio talk show host.
We've got to say this is the line. Life is sacred.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
So Sandy, I'm interested to talk to you because I've seen you, I've seen your content and listened to your content for a very long time. I think I became aware of you around the beginning of the Tea Party era.
Oh yeah, and I was in Chicago then, right, on the radio. Yeah.
So what I'm interested to know, because most people that I speak to at these types of events, at MAGA events or conservative events now, were sort of brought into the political process by Donald Trump, right? I don't know how many times I've heard, "I didn't vote often or at all until Trump came down that escalator," right? So as somebody who's been an activist for a very long time, do you notice a big difference between, say, the atmosphere around the Tea Party versus MAGA, or do you see it as a very similar movement?
Oh, I think it's a very similar movement, and I don't think it. I know that for some people, it centers around Donald Trump. But I think for most people, honestly, from my experience, it centers around love of country. Like with the Tea Party issue, that's, of course, I've been involved in politics a lot longer than the Tea Party movement. Not politics, but issues. Trying to fight for what I believe is right and the moral issues. I've been involved in that before. I wouldn't consider myself a person involved in party issues. That's not, they're too much of interest to me. Even though I follow it. But I don't really make a distinction. I think the Tea Party was people who understood that there was a threat to America's freedoms in terms of health care during the Tea Party issue. And then later with Donald Trump, there were other issues. We had several years of Barack Obama. And I'm from Chicago. I actually campaign for Alan Keyes, who challenged Barack Obama for Senate. So I knew all about his past a lot more than most people knew. And so a lot of us, you know, saw his policies and what he actually did, and we were pretty fired up. So when Donald Trump came along, we were happy to have America as we believed it should be, constitutional and historical, reinstated, at least brought back from what we felt was the brink of some kind of a disaster going off the path. So same but different, but I think the whole thing is based on American history, the founding fathers, the Constitution, our loyalty, our parents serving in combat and, you know, various wars. There was a loyalty and a love of country, and that's what united us.
Okay. The thing that I found interesting about the Tea Party is that it really was based on the revolt over healthcare. Like, it was an issue, it was a specific thing that motivated people. I find that the MAGA movement is a little bit different, because it's people at Tea Party events that I went to seem to be very conservative, and they could articulate what conservatism is.
That's right? True, yeah.
I find it very different because within MAGA, if you start to talk to people about issues that are not like culture war issues, right? If you talk about economics and stuff, you find a
they
lot of Democrats.
Know.
you don't find too many real conservatives, at least like the William F. Buckley, you know,
no, that's true.
George Will type conservatives.
You're right about that. I never thought about it. This whole new breed that's come in because of Donald Trump and other, right, a broader spectrum of issues.
Because I would say that he's not a conservative. Not on economics, for sure. You know what I mean?
Well,
and I don't think on national defense either. I mean, you know, if you look at like the Reagan
traditional
model,
the traditional like hawks, war hawks, and all of that. Yeah, you're right. But he's a conservative on the issue of loving his country. That's kind of the uniting thing, and being a champion to try to bring it back to where it should be, as far as we're concerned, the faithfulness to the Constitution and the law. So that's a uniting thing. I mean, I agree. He's certainly not a conservative like the Tea Party movement were.
Right.
Yeah.
So as far as his position on abortion, I know this is what everybody's talking about lately, because it seems like he's had three different positions over the last 3 weeks. And so just to let you know where I'm at with it, I'm somewhat friendly with a pastor down in Mississippi, and I've interviewed him several times, and he's kind of bombastic, and he's got a somewhat popular podcast, but he's a little out there, right? Even right-wingers think he's a little. But I texted him just to get his – every once in a while I'll ask him to – if I want to know what the far right is thinking, he's a good guy to ask, right? And I asked him I said, look, I know you can't possibly – agree with his positions on this. You just can't. I know you well enough to know that. But he's also kind of culty with Trump. So I'm like, how do you square this? Because, you know, I've always thought that a lot of evangelical leaders are well aware that Donald Trump is not a man of God. I don't think he's ever read more than a Bible verse at a time. I don't think, you know, he would rather chew glass than go to church. And whatever. That's just my view of it. And I think that most evangelical leaders know that, but they look at it as a transactional thing, right? So who wanted Roe overturned. That was something. Give him a list of judges that he could appoint to be Supreme Court justices, and we know that he'll do it because he knows he has to, right? But they don't actually believe that he's a believer, or at least anything more than a nominal believer. You know what I mean? So is it purely transactional, or does his position on abortion really bother you?
Well, you've asked me a couple of things, actually. First of all, in terms of his faith, I would agree with you. I mean, I've been in meetings with him, and I've actually prayed in a meeting where he was, and I didn't have a sense at all that he was a Christian, and I've never said that. Now, I do think that a lot of Christians said he was a Christian. I don't know why they said that, because I just think you have to be careful about that. I would... but nobody knows his heart. I would say in regard to his faith, which I don't know, because I don't know. But I do think that his attempted assassination, we saw a different side of him. And he didn't say, look how strong I was, I survived the bullet. He said it was because of God. God spared me. And you know, the part about being a Christian is just the humility on your knees, recognizing God, that's how it starts. You know, and so I thought that was a really good sign. But I'm not saying he's a Christian now, but I do think he has changed. He was at the Republican convention. His whole demeanor was different. I've never seen him so humble. So
it's kind of off-brand for him to be humble at all.
Yeah,
right?
Totally. Yeah. Well, I've always said, if you had known some of the things I said when Trump was running, that his biggest enemy is not his moral failures in the past. It's his biggest problem, and the biggest danger with him is his ego. Because we know just that, first of all, I'll just say as a Christian, God resists the proud and gives grace to the humble. He does not like arrogance and pride. And arrogance and pride makes men stupid. I mean, men, I'm in media. I know all about this. I mean, I've seen so many men just destroy themselves with great talent, great intellect, and then they just start believing in themselves so much, and it ruins them. And that's biblical. I mean, we see that, and that's what I was afraid of with him. And it has been his biggest challenge, I think. But I do think the attempted assassination made a dent in that. Whether it's a permanent dent, I don't know. All right, on the issue of abortion, look, we're in a different place where, you know, there was a time when evangelical voters had the luxury of, you know, living the litmus test about candidates being their position on abortion. We used to really actually have that luxury. And I think we had that because most of our candidates, at least we all agreed on loving this country, wanting the best for it. Even though candidates might have had different views about how to get there, they weren't out to destroy it. They just disagreed on the tax rates or, you know, on how to do social services or whatever, okay? So it was a simpler time. We're in uncharted waters. And so I have to say, you ask me, so I would say, of course I don't approve of President Trump's coming back away from his strong abortion stance when he ran before. No, I don't approve of that. But I'll tell you what. Well, let me finish that thought first. The thing of it is, Patrick, there are other forms of preserving life. You know, it's not just the preservation of an unborn baby, which I'm all about, but there's, like, I don't know if you saw the film last night. It was on sex trafficking. And I've always been kind of a skeptic. I'll just confess to you. I've been a skeptic on how much has been made of sex trafficking, because it's been for a long time. And I thought, come on, there's not that much. I mean, I just feel like people have used it as a, you know, ridden a hobby horse. And I sort of didn't want to ride that hobby horse. Man, what we saw last night about how children are being, hundreds of thousands of children being brought into our country with the cooperation of Health and Human Services, Alejandro Mayorkas, Homeland Security, even all the way up to, and I want to go into all the details, I just would say our government is complicit with bringing these hundreds of thousands of kids, and we are seeing, if that movie is true, and I believe it is, these guys worked really hard to get some footage, they are disregarding the lives of these children. Babies are being brought over and sent kind of farmed out to people who are using them sexually, using them in horrible ways. We even believe some harvesting of organs. That's just one issue. That's a life issue, too. That's an issue of life. And then also, I'm from the Midwest. I'm from Chicago originally. And my husband and I have been in D.C. for years. We don't live there now. But when we drive across the Midwest, we see the devastation. We see the devastation of businesses, of small towns. I'm a small town gal. I see that just hollowed out, even where we are right here in Texas, Greenville. You drive up and down the streets, you know, that just, this is life. This is livelihood, the ability to support your family. I see people when I go to, I live in a place where people have money. So I don't see this on a regular basis. When I go outside the confines of that, I see people limping. We had a guy come to do some work in our house, and he's a young guy, very fit, tall, but he's limping. And I said, what's the matter? He said, oh, my knee went out, but, you know, I don't have health insurance. So there's life in other ways, you see. So I have to look at the breadth of it. I have to look at the future of our country, which I think of the lack of concern about our soldiers, about Americans abroad by this administration. I just think a disregard for human life in so many different ways. And I also then have to say to myself that Kamala Harris and Joe Biden embrace abortion for all 9 months, and you say that, well, that's not true, but I know it is true. I know that Kamala Harris was the person who, when David Dow Leiden broke the undercover videos in Planned Parenthood of them discussing selling baby body parts and speculating about, you know, how they, you know, what they were going to do with that money. Kamala Harris was the Attorney General in California at the time. David Dow Leiden's in his early 20s. She goes into his home, takes all of his videos, the worst videos we haven't even seen. I think they're just now being released. And then she's fined him several hundred thousand dollars. He's still in court because he did these undercover videos. And Planned Parenthood has given her awards when she was Attorney General. So I'm just trying to say that the alternative is so much worse, that he is, on this issue, he has the better position, even though I don't like it. Did that answer your question?
No, it does. And I think a lot of people agree with that, and I think there are some people who are delusional and think that he is somehow this pro-life warrior and all this, and that's crazy. But the reason that I ask is because it really doesn't matter what one politician thinks about the issue or whatever. We're not going to make abortion illegal across the board in this country. It's never going to happen. And what's strange to me is that the media, and I think often correctly, has given him credit for understanding his base really well, better than most politicians do, right? He speaks to, I've been to I don't know how many Trump rallies. People are excited about it, and he speaks to them the way they want to be spoken to, and they enjoy it, right? And I think that on issues like immigration, national defense, or whatever, he doesn't need to think, what does my base want to hear, because he actually does think that way, right? So when he says he wants to close the border, or when he wants to ban Muslims, or whatever, he means it. That's he's not lying. I'll give him the credit for that, right? But there are a couple of blind spots, and abortion is one of them, because I think he is either nominally pro-choice or just doesn't care about the issue really at all, because he tends to only care about what affects him. He's a 78-year-old man. This isn't an issue for him anymore. That's just my opinion. But I think he really believed that getting Roe overturned was the goal. For the real pro-life movement in this country, it was a milestone on the way to the major goal, which is an across-the-board constitutional ban on abortion. I think he didn't know that because he doesn't think about the issue. So he was taken aback and kind of shocked when immediately Lindsey Graham decides that he wants to propose a national ban. I think he thought, I thought I gave you what you asked for, and now you want more.
Oh, I think you're right. I do think you're right. The only thing I would disagree with you on is that we have some video of Trump years ago when he was a billionaire playboy, all those years. So he gave a lot of interviews, as you know. And he actually always was kind of pro-life. I've heard him say things, which surprised me, too. Mm. I'm not saying he was a champion on it, but his inclination was that the life, baby children are important, and he didn't think it was a, he didn't approve of it. But I don't think he's a champion, and I agree with you. I don't think he studied the issue. And I do think he was surprised. I think he thought, you know, overturning Roe versus Wade was the... But I will tell you this. I don't blame him for his confusion over abortion as much as I blame pro-life groups for not taking the lead. They left a vacuum. They did not properly... this will be a scoop for you. I led Concerned Women for America for a number of years, and I've been in the pro-life battle since I was in Chicago. But what I have found is that pro-life groups have become a bit of an industry themselves. They build, you know, a kingdom, and they have a brand, and look, it's not true of every person. I can't say that. But for the most part, they are not willing to put pedal to the metal. And they let him down. They let all of us down when they allowed the 2022 election to come and go, and they provided politicians with nothing really to say, nothing thoughtful, and even nothing thoughtful now. President Trump is like in a vacuum. Right, he's not an expert on this. But there are arguments to counter the compelling arguments that pro-choice women are giving. I mean, you could say, look, okay, let's paint a picture here. The abortion pill is, you know, I think it's like 70% of abortions, maybe 80% of all abortions now. So let's just talk about this little pill. So these women get this pill. It's actually two pills. The first pill kills the baby in utero. The second pill starts the expulsion. So you got a 16-year-old girl, a 15-year-old girl, or a 25-year-old girl, I don't care what age. She's home, and she's going to her bathroom. She's killed the baby in her womb, so it's lifeless, and then it starts to be expelled. And she has to go through that labor. She has to go through that labor, but she's all by herself. She's all by herself. It doesn't always go well. Often it comes out in the toilet. And there are cases of girls that have taken that baby, I know this, to a clinic, like a plant, not a Planned Parenthood, but maybe Planned Parenthood. I wouldn't know about that. But Preborn. Preborn advertises my show, so I know this. They've taken this little baby, and they feel horrible about what just happened. And they, can you save my baby? But they can't save the baby. Now, you talk about trauma. You talk about trauma. They talk about the pill like it's nothing. You could tell those stories. You could have girls give their testimony. But no, the pro-life groups don't do that. I've never in my life more regretted that I don't have the platform I once had. I just tell you, it kills me because there are so many ways, because it's truth. You see, the other thing is a lie, that this is better for women. It's better? Are you kidding me? I'm of an age where, you know, abortion became legal when I was a young woman. I have seen the effect it's had on women my age. I think it is responsible for a lot of the anger, the hardness, the shutdown of emotion, just this anger of older women and younger ones too, because it's not natural to take the life of your own baby. It's not natural. It never will be. Our natural bent is to lay down our life for our children. And it's true of husbands, too. I did a show when I was on Drive Time in Chicago years ago. You know, I covered the pro-life issue so much, I was trying to figure out a new angle, frankly. Yeah. And so I thought, you know, today I'm going to open up the phone lines and just ask men if they have an opinion about this. If they, you know, they don't have anything to say about this, of course it doesn't affect them, right? Yeah, so for 2 hours... my phone lines were lit up constantly. And I heard things like, I've never been able to talk about this. I had a girlfriend in college, and she got pregnant, and she had an abortion. I didn't want her to, I'll just say, that didn't always happen this way, this isn't, but I did hear this. I didn't want her to do it. And every year on the birth, you know, the date of the abortion, I grieved. He said, it's always bothered me. One by one by one, it was like a therapy session. And so I'm just saying to you, there are a million reasons why abortion is not good, and they make sense. They're not contrived, silly little things to pull at your heartstrings. It is the truth. It's a horrible thing to encourage this from women and from the fathers of the babies. It does terrible things to them long-term, depression, drugs. Some women don't care. Some are callous. But I'm telling you, sometimes it's too early to tell. You don't know till you get to the end of your life what that's going to do to you and your emotions. So I blame the pro-life groups, the pro-life leaders, for not coming up with compelling arguments of why this is not right. Because then it's not just about the politics, but it's what we must do to help people understand why we have to stop this. And it needs to come from individuals. You know, I don't think laws, you're right, will never outlaw it completely. That's like prohibition. How did that go? Yeah. You know, because people sin. I mean, I'm sorry, I call it sin. We all want to do stuff we shouldn't do. And it's hard. You can't really have enough laws on the books to stop people from doing things that are wrong.
Right. So just one more question. I've always found it kind of confusing that, and I think I know what the answer to this is, but as an evangelical, how is it possible? Because if you told me this 15 years ago, I would have laughed at you. If you told me that
not laugh at me, Patrick. have laughed at me. You have laughed at me. You've watched me all these years. Don't tell me you haven't.
Yeah, I've had a few laughs.
Okay. All right.
But no, if you had told me, say 15 years ago, that the evangelical movement in this country would throw Mike Pence, of all people, under the bus in favor of Donald Trump. If you said that to me in 2010, I would have laughed in your face, because that would be ridiculous. That's an impossible thing that could never happen. How did it happen?
Well, I can only speak for myself, you know? Okay. Yeah. How can I say this to you, Patrick? I would prefer an honest pagan or an atheist over a feigning Christian. Mm. I just would.
Yeah.
When I was dating...
Do you doubt Mike Pence's sincerity?
I don't know about his fate. I'm not saying that, but I've just...
Because he's what I think of when I think of an evangelical Christian politician. He's the guy. He's the poster child.
He used to be.
When did he cease to be?
Mike disappointed. We saw him do some duplicitous things. It started in Indiana when he was governor.
Mm-hmm.
The issue of it was not transgenderism then, it was still the LGBTQ issue. I'm sorry, I'm trying to make sure I get this right. He said one thing and did another. Let me just say that.
Okay.
There were some people coming after some, as I recall, it was a pizza parlor in Indiana, and they were being threatened because they wouldn't, I don't know what they wouldn't do.
I remember what it was. They said to a local news crew that if asked, they weren't asked, but if asked to cater a gay wedding, and I don't know any gay person who would have pizza at their wedding, but okay, fine. So it was like unnecessary to even talk about it, but they volunteered that information, and then they got boycotted and they went out of business.
Okay.
Yeah.
I don't remember exactly what Mike did even. I'm just telling you.
He was governor.
He said one thing and did another.
Okay.
Same thing on Common Core. People hated Common Core.
Right.
And there was a strong, Indiana's a big education state, so there was a strong fight against Common Core. And Common Core was teaching children really bad things and teaching them poorly on the important things. And Mike said he was with them, and then he stabbed them in the back. They came up with something that was exactly Common Core, and they named it something different. That was a real blow because people were disappointed, and they knew that he was not true to his word. And that was the chink in the armor. So, and then when, this is complicated. See, some of us have never really believed he supported President Trump. I'll just say this. When he hired Mark Short as his chief of staff, Mark was a never-Trumper from pillar to post. And I believe a campaign started behind the scenes to get Mike, President Trump out and Mike Pence in. I think that was what was happening. That was pretty disgusting. And so...
Do you think on January 6th he...
Yes.
Okay, I was
going to... Since you ask.
Well, do you think that he took appropriate action or inappropriate inaction?
I think he was a coward.
What would you like to see him do that in that situation?
Well, there's not... There were enough states that were having serious questions. Pennsylvania and Wisconsin, and you remember it, we were still in turmoil. Nothing had been worked out, and there was some serious questions. And so that's why the alternate elective electors, which is not illegal, it's for, we have a lot of history of doing that. Now they've been criminalized, which is ridiculous. But if the election, if they'd found a lot of fraud in the elections, they needed to be prepared. That's why that was done. And so there's nothing in the Constitution, or there's no law that says that the vice president can't delay the accepting of the electors, and that's what they ask him to do.
Do you think that that sets? I believe that sets a terrible precedent, because especially you think about this. 1960 was one of the closest elections that we've ever had.
I was alive then, and you weren't.
I wasn't, but
yes, I remember.
There are these things called books, and I've read some of them.
And I hope you read the right books. Right, that's all I can say.
Well, I don't think there's anything. There's no such thing as a wrong book. Maybe Mein Kampf or something. But anyway. All books can be good. The idea that Richard Nixon was the sitting vice president at the time, and that was there were legitimate questions about just because the technology was so bad, and there was a lot of, you know, we've
what
got a history
technology?
That's what I'm saying. So it was so close that there were a lot of people who really believed that Nixon might have won that election. I don't, but I mean, you know, he had. Do you think? I mean, he was kind of a borderline autocrat anyway, right? So if he And he was also a constitutional lawyer, right? Don't you think that if this was really possible, that Nixon, of all people, would have put his thumb on the scale or done something like that? To me, that's all the proof you need to know that the vice president has no business overturning an election.
No. But why would you say overturning an election? See, that's wrong.
No, because
that's
we know if you had sent it to the states... The states they picked had Republican legislatures, which would have returned the favorable.
I don't think that's. I don't think that's true, because I could tell you. First of all, I could tell you firsthand that having a Republican legislature really doesn't mean anything. The Republican Party, for the most part, you just ask me to go on the warpath about the Republican Party. There are very few diehard conservatives in the Republican Party, and when Trump won. So many of those Republicans were against him. They hated him. So, there's no assurance. No, I don't. That was not a plan.
Is Doug Mastriano not in charge of the Senate in Pennsylvania? I mean, at the time,
That's one state.
Right.
That sounds like a. Don't be offended. That's a narrative. And when you say Prince was called to overturn the election, that's really.
I understand the mechanics behind it.
No, that's a mischaracterization that the media uses, the leftist media. That's not true. They asked him to pause. There was a lot of confusion about the voting. There were all these delays in ballots. There were all these ballots that showed up. There was in Atlanta, those boxes under the desk. There were video. I mean, we didn't know. We didn't know. And states were asking for a delay. He could have delayed. There was nothing in the Constitution that said he couldn't delay. I think he was not inclined to delay because he was hoping that President Trump would crash and burn and he would march in, because that's what I think Mark Short was whispering in his ear.
We're going to disagree on it, but I think that his best chance to get elected was to serve another 4 years under Trump as VP and then get
Might be true, but that doesn't mean that's what he thought. But I'm just telling you, Mark, I'm just telling you, I was there in, not that I know, I was in D.C. closer to like talking and hearing people and having inside information. And I just...
Were you there on January 6th?
I almost was.
Yeah, I was. It was.
Were you there?
I testified in the Proud Boys trial. I got subpoenaed.
Really?
Yeah, I testified on behalf of the Proud Boys.
Did you really?
And I'm a liberal. You know what I mean? So
Can you tell me what you said? Ask you? Can I interview you?
Yeah.
So what did you talk about? What did you testify to? And whose trial was it?
It was Joe Biggs, Enrique Tarrio, Ethan Nordine, Zachary Real, and Dominic Pizzola. They were all tried at the same time. Yeah. They were all convicted of a ridiculous thing called seditious conspiracy, which they didn't commit. Anyway, just to tell you how this went, I befriended Joe Biggs back in 2019, and I kind of followed the Proud Boys around the country, everywhere from San Francisco to Miami to Texas, all over the place. And I stayed at Airbnbs with them. I got to know them very well, right? They're not all the same. There are some bad guys in that organization, and there are some decent people that I like. To say that it's not a racist organization is kind of ridiculous. There are a lot of racists in that organization. Right. I saw it with my own eyes and heard it, and I was around it.
But Enrique was not one. He was a black Cuban, right? Enrique's a Cuban.
Yeah. Well, black. Let me tell you something.
What?
This is something that nobody will ever... You'll never hear this from anybody else. I was at... There was a rally in Richmond, Virginia. It was a Second Amendment rally. There were like 20,000 people showed up. It was on January 20th, 2020, right?
Okay.
This is just before the pandemic and the lockdowns, right? So people were... You know, this is one of the last big rallies I went to before everything stopped. Yeah. And I was at an Airbnb full of Proud Boys after the event was over. And there was a kid walking around, a young guy in his 20s, with a shaved head and looked like a skinhead. He took off his jacket and he had a shirt that said Rahoa across it. It's a Nazi band, right? It's a very well-known Nazi band, if you know anything about that stuff. It's an acronym. It stands for Racial Holy War. That's the name of this band.
Oh, boy.
They're a Canadian band. They're absolutely horrible. The lead singer started that thing, Stormfront. It's like a message board. It's a Nazi message board. Very popular among
people. I have heard of that.
Yeah. Anyway, I saw this, and I went up to Enrique, and I said, hey, you have a problem. I understand you don't know what that means, but I do because I study extremism and I know exactly what that is. And you have got to get rid of this guy because you can't look Sarah Seidner or any of the other reporters at CNN that like to interview you. You can't look them in the face and say, I don't tolerate racism if you know that you have a Nazi. This isn't like gray area stuff.
Yeah.
And he told me, I'm not going to get involved in local chapter politics.
Okay.
So like, the idea
mistake.
That they don't tolerate.
Big mistake.
Yeah. So anyway, that's the deal with them. But the reason I testified was I was down there as a photojournalist. I was down there on January 6th to take photos. I took a lot of photos of Joe and Enrique wasn't there that day. He got arrested the day before.
On the plane,
so,
right?
Yeah, he was in Baltimore. But anyway, the rest of them were there. Ethan Nordine and Zachary Real and all those guys that were on trial. I was with them all morning. If there was some kind of plan to overthrow the government, I would have heard about it.
You would have known about it.
So I actually left them before the riot started because I was certain that nothing was going to happen with them. This was clearly, they snapped. They had they made a terrible judgment, but it wasn't pre-planned. It wasn't a conspiracy. And they got charged with something that they didn't do. So if you want to charge them with assaulting a police officer, there's a million things you could charge them with. And I do believe that they did deserve to go to jail for a short, but they should have been out before the trial even started, right? They should have gotten time served. Instead, they got 16 to 22 years, depending on which guy. And I sat there and watched the government prosecute them for being disreputable people. I'm going to try to not use foul language, but they basically said, hey, these guys are scumbags, aren't they? And then they showed video of, and this is why they did this, I don't know, but they had these Zoom calls that were recorded where they said some of the most reprehensible stuff that you could possibly say. It made them look terrible. In their own words, this isn't spin, they really, you know, said some awful stuff. And the jury hated them. And I think that they got convicted for being jerks, you know, rather than
for law breaking.
Yeah, and so it drove me crazy, and I felt the need to testify because I had been around these guys long enough to know how they operate. And if they were going to do any kind of protest, it's always meticulously planned. They don't just go off, you know what. And I think that they had like a mental breakdown. I think they made a terrible mistake. But we differentiate between crimes of passion and premeditated crimes, right?
Right.
We always have. In every, you know, there's a difference between someone who kills someone in a rage or somebody who plans to do it and takes an airplane down to, you know. So these guys, the idea that they planned this out, if they had, it would have been done differently because I saw how they planned protests. For a couple of years before this happened, I you know, the jury didn't buy it, apparently, because if they did, they wouldn't have gotten convicted. But I did my best, you know.
Well, the good for you, Patrick. And I would imagine, you know, this is what we've seen in most of these trials. It's unbelievable, especially the judges in D.C. It is absolutely shameful. It's jaw-dropping. And that's why Americans, that's why back to the election, why... People like to say, the left really likes to say that we're all Trump delusion. That we are, you know, gaga about Trump, and that's really not true. Maybe for some people.
It is true
for some people, yeah. But for rational, constitutional republic people, we see this travesty of justice. And it's just, and we see that it's dangerous, and it's leading someplace that's very dangerous for all of us.
It is dangerous, and I can tell you that I've been to so many Trump events, and, you know, whether it's a rally or it was a Proud Boys thing or it was, you know, whatever, everything changed after the election. The atmosphere on January 6th and everything I've been to since then is drastically different than it was. It's night and day different than it was before that. The same types of rallies are now, there's a meanness that wasn't there. When he, you know, when I started going to things in, you know, 2018 or whatever, MAGA was kind of sitting fat and happy because their boy was in office and everything was good, and he was starting to do some of the stuff that they wanted, and there was no opposition. The Democrats didn't have the House, didn't have the Senate. You know, this is, they had everything that they wanted, and they were nice. So when I would go to things, I would go to events, and, you know, or I'd go on InfoWars or whatever, I would get they would tease me. It was almost like it was a good-natured ribbing. It's like, well, he's your president too. I heard that like 1,000 times. And they try to get a rise out of me and stuff, but it doesn't work with me. But, you know, anyway, they didn't mind having me around, and they liked to, you know, bust my chops about being a liberal and stuff like that. But it didn't have this mean-spirited nature to it that it started to after the election. Not toward me specifically, but toward just people in general. Like, there was an energy. I come off like a hippie when I say this, but like there was a vibe, right? You know,
like Kamala vibe,
right? It was a different vibe.
A mega vibe.
After. Yeah, it was bad. It wasn't the same as it was.
Really?
Today is kind of different because people are nice here, but
you understand because you've been around now. I think you might be right, but there is an anger. There's an anger. There's an anger at how
palpable.
The J6ers have been treated.
Yeah.
There's an anger at the move to try to, what we feel is disrupt and destroy the Republic.
Yeah.
And so, there's an anger. And it's like, not over that line,
right.
No. And we will fight. So that was Patrick Riley. That was part one of my discussion with him at this First Amendment Film Festival in Texas. Patrick, again, if you... are just tuning in, or you don't remember from the first, is a freelance photographer who I met there, who said he'd been following me for years. He told me I'm on the left, and I'm an atheist, but I would really love to interview you. So we entered into this, and he interviewed me, and I interviewed him a bit too. We both got it down on tape. It was just a delightful conversation. I really like Patrick. Part two, we get into faith. We get into being an atheist. I think that you will enjoy that. Well, this is Sandy Rios on Sandy Rios 24/7. Hi, this is Sandy Rios. A lot of Christians would be shocked to learn they are personally profiting from abortion and pornography. It's unnerving to realize just how many companies and corporations are actively involved in unbiblical practices. To help cut through the red tape, there is a great option known as Timothy Plan. Timothy Plan is the pioneer in biblically responsible investing. Timothy Plan carefully filters out companies involved in practices Scripture tells us to avoid. We are in an all-out culture war. One powerful way to make a difference is to put our money where our values are. Please go to timothyplan.com/sandy. That's timothyplan.com/sandy. Or call 1-800-TIM-PLAN. That's 1-800-846-7526. Discover how to be a biblically responsible investor.
Before investing, carefully consider the fund's investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses of the investment company. This and other important information can be found in the fund's prospectus. To obtain a copy, visit timothyplan.com or call 800-846-7526. Read each prospectus carefully before investing.
This is Sandy Rios 24/7 on American Family Radio.
If you have the means, would you consider a leadership gift to save babies in a bigger way? Your tax-deductible donation of $5,000 will sponsor Preborn's entire network for 24 hours, helping rescue 200 babies. To donate, go to preborn.com/sandy. That's preborn.com/sandy. Hi, it's Sandy Rios, your old friend from The Morning Show. So many crucial and frightening events are unfolding before our eyes that we have decided to re-engage with the daily news on Sandy Rios 24/7, as we once did in the mornings.
I want to invite you to come over to the podcast, Sandy Rios 24/7, so that we can work our way through these difficult times together. Just go to AFR.net or any podcast platform. You can also find Sandy Rios 24/7 at sandyrios.com. And one more thing, a fun thing. My book, God's Velvet Hammer, is now on Audible. Sometimes listening is better than reading. I recorded it in my own voice, which makes it even more personal for all of you who know me so well. Audible books are available on Amazon.com. God bless each and every one of you for your faithfulness to Him. My prayer is that as we stand together in this battle, we can finish well.
The Sandy Rios 24/7 podcast are available at AFR.net. Back to Sandy Rios 24/7 on American Family Radio.
Mr. Trump, you're pro-life. And I want to ask you specifically, do you want the court, including the justices that you will name, to overturn Roe v. Wade, which includes, in fact, states a woman's right to abortion?
Well, if that would happen, because I am pro-life and I will be appointing pro-life judges, I would think that that will go back to the individual states.
But I'm asking you specifically, would you
if
like
to... If they overturned it, it'll go back to the states.
But what I'm asking you, sir, is do you want to see the court overturn? You just said you want to see the court protect the Second Amendment. Do you want to see the court overturn Roe v.
Well, if we put another two or perhaps three justices on, that's really what's going to be, that's will happen. And that'll happen automatically, in my opinion, because I am putting pro-life justices on the court. I will say this, it will go back to the states, and the states will then make a determination.
All right, I thought it would be good to hear that. Sandy Rios back with you after my discussion with Patrick. To just kind of assess how pro-life President Trump really is, not that we can really know, but since Patrick and I talked about it, we should revisit that. Now, I just want to point out that President Trump did exactly what he said in that debate. He appointed not two but three pro-life justices, and Roe versus Wade was overturned, and he explained what that would mean, and that's exactly what it did mean, and that's exactly what's happened. So, but then further on in that debate, Chris Wallace asks Hillary Clinton, because that was the presidential debate in 2015. Chris Wallace turns to Hillary and asks her about her position on abortion, and Trump responds, because I think this is an insight into what he really does think about abortion. Let's listen. Clip 8.
Dr. Clinton, I want to explore how far you believe the right to abortion goes. You have been quoted as saying that the fetus has no constitutional rights. You also voted against a ban on late-term partial birth abortions. Why?
Because Roe v. Wade very clearly sets out that there can be regulations on abortion so long as the life and the health of the mother are taken into account. And when I voted as a senator, I did not think that that was the case. The kinds of cases that fall at the end of pregnancy are often the most heartbreaking, painful decisions for families to make. I have met with women who, toward the end of their pregnancy, get the worst news one could get, that their health is in jeopardy if they continue to carry to term, or that something terrible has happened or just been discovered about the pregnancy. I do not think the United States government should be stepping in and making those most personal of decisions. So, you can regulate if you are doing so with the life and the health of the mother taken into account.
Mr. Trump, your reaction, and particularly on this issue of late-term partial birth
abortion. Well, I think it's terrible. If you go with what Hillary is saying, in the ninth month, you can take the baby and rip the baby out of the womb of the mother just prior to the birth of the baby. Now, you can say that that's okay. And Hillary can say that that's okay, but it's not okay with me. Because based on what she's saying and based on where she's going and where she's been, you can take the baby and rip the baby out of the womb in the ninth month on the final day. And that's not acceptable.
All right, that was 2015, the presidential debate between Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton. And I guess I would say personally, I think that President Trump was speaking from his heart. And all of the years I've been following this, I have never seen a so-called pro-life president or leader make such a graphic, impassioned plea over partial birth abortion. That was not in the script. That's something that he said from his heart. And even Ronald Reagan never was that strongly pro-life on the stage. So I just thought we should revisit that since Patrick and I talked about it. And I didn't want to debate him on every issue because our purpose was to talk and kind of come to a place where we had agreement and build a relationship, which I think we did. And so, but in I wanted all of us to be clear that I do believe President Trump is pro-life. He's now kind of wavering on at what point he thinks abortion should be legal, and that's not a happy place for those of us that believe life is sacred from conception, because the Bible says very clearly that he knit us together in our mother's womb. And so so that's why we believe life is precious, that we are known even at conception. So there you go. I don't know if President Trump feels that way, but I do believe he's pro-life. Well, that was a delightful conversation. And tune in to the next podcast because it's part two with Patrick when we get into, you know, faith and why believe in God. And it was a challenge. And I think, again, I think we both enjoyed the conversation. I hope he did. Well, I want to thank you. You know, you can call us at 662, you know that, 821-2040. You can write us at sandy@afr.net. You can find us on any social platform. I'm more active on Twitter than any place else. You can listen to any podcast platform to hear the podcast. You can go to sandyrios.com. That's an easy way to listen. I want to thank our sponsors, our new sponsors, Timothy Plan, where you put your money where your values are and discover how to be a biblically responsible investor. Visit timothyplan.com/sandy. That's timothyplan.com/sandy. Or call 1-800-TIM-PLAN. That's 1-800-TIM-PLAN. Thank you for listening to today's edition of Sandy Rios 24/7.